Slaps McGee brings you
Phoenix City.
Welcome to Phoenix City for another week. We have all four podcasters here, Dave, Frosty and Cam. How are you doing?
Good.
Spectacular. Thank you, Patrick.
We're trying out a little new piece of kit, so we don't need to share a microphone tonight. So we'll see how that goes.
The Siamese twins over here.
Yeah. If you end up
to cuddle up, but we do have two microphones.
If you end up losing Dave and Frosty, it's because of that, but we'll see how we go. It's because we've got special guest David Dome joining us this week. How are you doing, Domi?
Quarter Patrick.
You brought some documentation along with you on the table?
I brought some paperwork and homework with me. Yep, I have prepared for this podcast.
More importantly, you brought donuts.
I didn't bring donuts.
Frosty bought donuts. Yeah. Sorry, mate. Sorry. I apologise for stealing your thunder.
The donuts are potentially... Thunderdome. I'm pretending more... Jeez. We're off to a good start here. Should we jump into some football? Because the A-League semi-finals were played over the weekend, and we have ended up with a Newcastle Jets versus Melbourne Victory final at Newcastle. I wish I was going, because that play is going to go off.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be a great time.
I think this is the ideal scenario, actually, for the season.
So, yeah.
Newcastle has just been the story of the season. Obviously, Sydney have been magnificent, but Newcastle have been the story of the season. To end up getting the home grand final after the seasons they've had since 2010 really is a Cinderella story. It's really cool.
That's the thing, is that the last game, can you remember the last playoff game that the Jets played before this year?
Yes, I can.
Can you remember what that was, Domi?
Was that against us?
It was against us.
I
was
there. Westpac Stadium.
Westpac Stadium.
And we beat them.
And Paul Eiffel. Almost broke himself.
But doesn't that feel like an age ago?
It was an age ago.
And they haven't played finals since then. So for them to do it now.
We have played finals.
We've won finals. We've won two finals since then.
But does it show you how good Ernie's been?
He didn't even win Coach of the Year.
I know, that's what really annoys me.
No, I'm not too disappointed about it. Graham Arnold's done amazing things with Sydney.
He has, but he's had the horses for it. Mm. You look at that Newcastle unit, that is not much better than they had last year.
It helps when you have players like Riley McGree scoring goals like the one he got, isn't it?
That was all right.
Yeah, the Scorpion.
Yeah, that was brilliant, actually.
I genuinely can't think of a better goal in the A-League ever.
I thought Berisha's side scissor was pretty spectacular.
Yeah.
And then Riley just pulls that one out and is like, oh, yeah, casual.
It was amazing. So, yeah, the Newcastle Jets beat Melbourne City 2-1, the Riley McGree goal, and then Jason Hoffman, of all people, popping up and scoring the winner.
It's because the Knicks softened them up.
Yeah, made them nervous. Although they did beat, who was it, Larry before? Brisbane?
Yeah.
There's a game in between, which is awesome for the Jets. I think everybody this weekend wants to see the Jets win, other than the Victory supporters.
And they don't count.
They don't count?
100% want Newcastle to win this. Oh, Mariners supporters probably don't either, but I'd love to see Newcastle win.
I reckon even Mariners fans would be getting behind this.
Yeah, and so the Victory are there because they beat Sydney 3-2. They scored all five goals because there were two Aussies to Sydney FC, and it was extra time. Terry Antonis levelled the scores for the wrong team with about 20 seconds left to play of injury time in normal time, but then went from zero to hero and scored the winner in the 117th minute of play. So it's nice for him. He's not going to blame himself for them losing, and it's nice that Sydney are gone because nobody wants to see Sydney win again.
I think as Cam was saying, for the neutral, this is the perfect result. I mean, we're getting a final that'll be much more exciting than if it had been Sydney versus pretty much anyone. They would have gone in heavy favourites, and I don't think it would have been much to play for. Here we've got it in Newcastle, where it's just going to be absolutely packed, and it's going to be a rocking time.
Sold out already.
And you've got potentially either team able to win it from here, which is going to be fantastic. It's going to be really good watch for people like us.
Newcastle is notoriously a bad place for Victory to go. They don't play well there. It is their bogey team. So I think it's an ideal scenario for Newcastle. Great for the league that someone other than Sydney is there. It sucks for Sydney, but just honestly, I think it's a really, really awesome scenario to end up with.
So the game is on Saturday night. It's moved from Sunday, where it's been for a bunch of years. It's on Saturday night now. Anyone know what time it is on Saturday?
No idea. So
no idea.
It's probably 9:40.
Anything else in that game in particular?
Yeah,
it
sure.
May have taken place on the field.
Sure, yeah. Snaps McGee, John Paul,
Moron.
Ran onto the field, and he says he didn't slap David Carney. But
there's video of it.
There's hand to the hand to the face.
It's at the very least a forceful fend.
Yeah, so it's a very ballsy denial, really, yeah. Isn't it?
When the Terry Antonis goal went in with like 5 minutes to play, two of the coaches, I think it was the assistant coach JP and the goalkeeping coach, ran on.
No, it was JP.
JP first.
Antoniadis came on when some of the Sydney players accosted JP.
Yeah.
And he was just trying to break it up. So I kind of feel for him getting 4 weeks.
Yeah, but still.
I feel strange that he got the same punishment. Yeah. I think 4 weeks for what he did is probably fair, but for JP, it should have been less.
Yeah.
Slaps McGee.
Slaps McGee. Apparently, it's been reported that what David Carney said to JP was, please show us some respect.
Yeah.
Which I do not believe for a second. No,
I tweeted exactly that. You read that statement, I'm like, there's no way that's all Carney said.
Carney wouldn't say that to his mum.
It might be the gist of what he said, but I'm pretty sure he'd use different words.
Yeah. So that was the other eventful thing from that game. They both get bans for 4 weeks. Domi, anything to say about the JP ban? No comment?
No, it's not a good look, though, is it?
No, it's not a good look. And it took the shine off that win for them, I think, because all of a sudden they had the game stopped for 5 minutes to deal with it, and all of a sudden that was just a petered out from there rather than the big finish that you'd want.
And the fact that they had to have their manager drag JP off, it made it even worse because it's just they had the footage all the way up the tunnel.
Yeah, well, the one thing you haven't mentioned is why he claims he ran on as well.
Oh, because
his claim that he thought it was golden goal is just unbelievable.
Golden goal.
He had 24 hours to come up with an excuse for this.
Yeah.
And that's the best he had was, I thought it was still golden goal.
Golden goal hasn't been a thing since Euro 2004.
Yeah, like, unbelievable that that's the best he's got.
I miss golden goal. Golden goal was a good time.
Apparently, it means you can go onto the field and slap players.
Once the game is done, it's fair game, isn't it? Especially when it's David Carney. Like, to be honest, of all the players that get slapped, I'm glad it was David Carney.
Sorry, I disagree.
Berisha? I honestly do not mind Berisha. He's the guy that everyone loves to hate.
Get out.
But it's just because he's passionate.
Get out.
He's such a when he's lying about Jura grabbing him by the throat, sure, don't like the guy. But on the field, I have no problem with him.
You can't pick and choose like that.
The excuse was afterwards. But that was a much better excuse than I thought it was golden goal.
It worked as well.
So. Yeah, it got off.
Well, sounds like the golden goal excuse worked as well.
What, 4 weeks?
4 weeks.
Yeah.
Forget it.
Yeah. Anyway, that's happening on Saturday. Let's come back to Wellington, to Phoenix Land. It's been an interesting few weeks, Tommy, hasn't it?
Very interesting few weeks, Patrick. Yeah.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
I guess the reason you're on is because all this talk of the ownership wanting to sell and
we invited him.
And we invited him, and you were keen to come on, as you always are. So thank you for joining us. But obviously, you had to make a pretty bold statement early last week to quash these rumours. Do you have any idea where they came from to start off with about the fact that we want to merge with South Sydney or whatever the rumour is?
the question is, like, which rumour do you want to address?
Totally.
And one of the reasons that we wanted to come on tonight was to – is to, you know, I mean, Rob mentioned it in his interview with Piney, is we get that the fans are doing it really hard at the moment. And it's been difficult for us to go, what statement do we address and potentially give them more oxygen, or do we just let this thing die away? And we thought, well, surely this thing, because there's such fabrication of lies. We thought, surely these things are going to die away, but they just haven't. And so we've, you know, Rob went on with Piney and we issued a statement on Friday, which we think went down pretty well and got a lot of positive feedback out of Australia because of it. But what I really wanted to do is come on and you know, address, and to be fair, most of the people listening to this podcast are fairly well informed and actually know what's going on. But there's a lot of people that aren't, and this really is, I wanted to have the opportunity to tell them exactly what's been going on.
So let's ask it up front. Does Wellnex want to sell the club?
No, Wellnex does not want to sell the club.
All right, we've got that out of the way.
So it's the context for all of this is there is this whole stream that's been happening out of Australia. And the disappointing thing is that New Zealand media is picking up and running with it as well. There is no doubt there is many, many vested interests in Australia who want their clubs to be at the forefront of the expansion. And Rob was right when they announced the expansion, a whole lot of these people came out of the woodwork. Just take one example. The last one was SBS last week. It's when we initiated the statement on Friday. So we've never talked to the Strikers. Never talked to the Strikers.
This is the Brisbane Strikers?
This is the Brisbane Strikers. Yep. And that statement that came out on Friday, was the first time we'd ever heard of it. Now, I'm going to show you something, Patrick.
Sure.
And the reason we're doing this is I don't want to embarrass anybody in Australia.
Yeah.
But it's an example of exactly what's happening over there and has been picked up on our media and is very, very damaging for this club. So I'm going to show you this.
Yep.
You see the date stamp on it?
Yep.
Thursday, 26th of April.
Last Thursday, yep.
Yep. 3:15 in the afternoon,
mm-hmm.
one day before the SBS article yep. that said, apparently we've been talking to the Brisbane Striker for years.
Sure.
Hi, David. This is bloody, bloody, blah.
Yeah.
From the Brisbane Strikers.
Yep.
One of the teams hoping to be one of the expansion teams. Got your number from Myron Blyberg.
Sure.
Fair enough. Who I work closely with. We are interested in talking to you about working with you and buying your license. Bloody, blah, blah, blah goes on talking about FFA. I trust we could talk now if you're still keen. Please let me know.
Yeah.
That was last week on Thursday. Now,
yep.
if you remember the article, it says that they've been talking to us for quite some time.
Yeah.
And it quotes Myron as saying that they're ahead of the curve. There is no curve.
Because that was on Thursday.
But that was on Thursday.
Yeah. I've just seen the head. It's.
I went back to this guy
yeah.
and said.
It's quite good.
yeah. This is complete and utter rubbish.
Yeah, totally.
And I was pretty upfront and I said. And then he started apologising via text. And I said, I don't want you to apologise privately.
Mm.
Make a public statement.
Yeah.
And then the coach of Brisbane Strikers gets in contact. And he says, we apologise for how this has come out. I said, don't apologise to me. Make a public retraction.
Yeah.
I haven't done anything.
Yeah.
Who this David Lewis guy is who wrote the article SBS is beyond me. Never, ever has he contacted us. Never, ever did he ring up and say, do I want to clarify some of these points? Can you please tell me who you've been talking to?
I mean, is that the real problem here? Is it?
It's made up. It's a complete fabrication.
The clubs over there are doing anything they can
correct.
To get their name at the top of the expansion list and
correct.
The journalists are just running with it and not calling you guys?
Exactly. And it's the same with a number of these that have come out. And it's the same with the South – Rob addressed the South Melbourne one, which
yep.
was a conversation we had with South Melbourne over 2 years ago.
Mm.
And at that time, Rob, you know, in his piece with Pointy, talked about it. It was a different landscape then. We were struggling to get any sort of any traction in New Zealand. So we thought, okay, you know, we're losing all our players in the windows. New Zealand football's not helping us. You know, is there some alignment out of Australia that we can make? And especially because we wanted to have a W League side.
Totally.
So
yeah.
if we base ourselves and we have some sort of part relationship with an Australian-based club, and Rob was very clear from the start, there's no way we're going to sell a majority of this club.
Mm-hmm.
No way.
Yeah.
We were very clear about that from the start. It was like a part investment and we'd base our youth team out of there or we'd have a W League association. We love that idea because that's
yeah.
our best way of getting into the W League.
Totally.
2 years ago, nothing happened, walked away, carried on, and then all of a sudden, apparently we've been talking to South Melbourne for, and it's very close to being done, getting done. Complete rubbish.
So
rubbish.
You categorically say there is no potential deal on the table with any expansion team in Australia.
There is no deal on – Rob was quite clear. There is
yep.
no deal on the table with any club in Australia, with any expansion club in Australia. We're not talking to anybody about that whatsoever. Rob's quite clear in that the macro issue in all of this is that it's the future of the A-League, which is the most important
mm-hmm.
thing. And what's happening there is that the Association of Professional Football Clubs of Australia, AFCA,
yep.
is doing a very, very good job
yep.
of really pushing the FFA, and I think the FFA are running scared. And part of it is the FFA are going, we've got problems here with the A-League. It's not in the greatest shape. Let's throw up a smoke screen and point over there at Wellington and divert attention.
Mm-hmm.
And after we issued that statement on Friday, the FFA and Gallup said, we've said to Rob that we can have a consultation anytime, come back to the table. This is complete rubbish.
Yeah.
Greg Griffin, who's the chair of AFCA,
yeah.
and the Australian said yesterday.
He's a former Adelaide chairman.
Former Adelaide chairman, yeah. but current chairman of
staying
AFCA.
Staying on as AFCA here. How do you say it?
AFCA.
AFCA.
Association of Professional, Australian Professional Football Clubs Association.
Right. You need a catchier acronym there, I think.
Yeah. It rolls off the tongue. That one. So this is what Greg said.
Yeah.
If your consultation ambitions were genuine and appropriate, you would have engaged our foreign owners for unilaterally appointing Deloitte and sneaking the press release out on Friday afternoon. So this is Greg, quoted in The Australian.
Yeah.
If you truly wish to engage with AFCA on this matter in a meaningful way, and it's obviously that they don't,
mm-hmm.
The invitation to attend a meeting is as yet more window dressing to add credibility to your unilateral actions. So the accusation that Gallup's making to us that we don't,
yeah.
that we can come to the table any time and discuss these things. It's complete window.
So do you think what's trying to happen there is they're trying to destabilise the relationship that AFCA has with the media and that it looks like you guys and FFA are trying to paint themselves as the good guys and you guys are the bad guys, which makes the whole thing harder?
Yeah, they're just trying to divert attention away from their own issues.
Sure. Let's go back slightly to the point about the media not contacting you. One of the things that the media have responded with is that it's been very hard to get people like yourself or Rob on the phone to have a chat. Is that a thing that you actively avoid doing, or is that
not really? Part of it is some of these. It's very difficult to comment on some of the stuff when it's sometimes very commercially sensitive, and we have
sure.
contracts with partners
yeah.
that we can't talk about,
mm-hmm.
And that it's not appropriate. To be honest with you, sometimes when you do go on the record,
it gets twisted.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what you say. The headline says one thing and you read it and the headline has absolutely no relationship to what you actually said. Mm. And sometimes there's one little paragraph of what your actual quote was. And this has happened to us many, many times. One little paragraph of what you actually said, which doesn't actually connect to what the headline says anyway. So we sort of, again, when we're weighing this up, we think about it and we go, are we giving it more oxygen if we actually comment on it, or if it just let it go, eventually we can carry on and do our own business.
And so that's what happened when that weekend, I think it was a week and a half ago now, where the weekend just fueled the rumors more and more and more. And then I think it was Tuesday you put out the release.
Yeah.
It was because you were hoping it would die down?
No, by that time we were thinking we'd arranged for Rob to talk to Piney.
Sure.
And we wanted to put something out which stated it, because we knew that Rob's piece was going to be quite long with Piney and mm-hmm. wouldn't get any serious statement out of it. But in the end, I think Piney did a good job and we got the points over that we wanted to get over.
He did. The problem being that Rob in the statement didn't necessarily – apart from the opening line, say we're not selling, whereas in the interview he said we're not selling.
Yeah, and that's probably right. We should have said in statement, this is the simple truth.
Yeah,
simple. We're not selling. No, we're not selling.
And that kind of helped perpetuate things. Is that something that you learn from now?
Yeah, I think. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It's a tricky business, Patrick.
It is a tricky business.
Mm. And look, we put our hand up this year. We haven't got everything right. Despite all the best intents, you know, we haven't got everything right and things don't always go according to plan. And you have to go, well, we just have to learn from that.
Yeah.
The only other one thing I do want to say is what Wellnex are doing with the Phoenix is philanthropy on a grand scale.
Totally.
It's massive, massive, massive amounts of money that they're putting. And, you know, in my weakest moments, I do go onto the forum and have a little breathe.
Don't do it.
What is wrong with you there?
Come on, that's self-flagellation.
Every now and then I'm surprised. Some of these people know quite a lot about what's going on. They're quite insightful comments in this. But, you know, they're ones that people say, well, Nick should step aside, and Rob says, it's heartbreaking because there is no one else that's going to pick this up. I tell you that now. There is zero. The wellness guys have put money into this thing, have made zero personal gain out of it.
Totally.
Tell you from the start.
Yeah.
Zero personal gain. It's a lot of hard work and a lot of angst for, I don't know why they do it. It's just, I mean, I know Lloyd set it up and Lloyd said, I want this for Wellington. I want to be a good Wellingtonian. Mm. I love the city. And when Lloyd passed, Rob took it on. He said, look, this is the vision for it. We just love the city. We want to do something for it. And these guys fronted up and said, yep, we'll be part of this. And they chucked dollar after dollar and dollar because, well, this is going to change. We just do this. This people will come. And it hasn't always gone to plan, but they've never, the wellness guys who are actively involved, you know, sometimes it really astounds me. You know, the flack that they get, especially people who want to criticize Rob.
Totally.
You know, the flack that he gets for what the amount of effort and energy, and like I keep saying, and very highly regarded in AFCA now. And AFCA is a very, very good unit.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in meetings when AFCA have been in negotiations with FFA and when AFCA have consulted amongst themselves. That is a very well set up group now. We've had a few iterations of club unions before, but this is a very, very structured and well-resourced group, and Rob is very well respected in that group.
Rob doesn't always get it right, though. Rob,
I don't think any of us ever get it right.
Totally,
all the time.
And it's, I guess it's easier when you're the money, when you provide the money to get your way. And is that something that Rob is learning as well from this process of how to deal with the media and how to dispel things?
I do you know what? I've never asked.
Yeah.
What Rob has said to me in the past, he said, this is a lot harder than we thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
He has said that to me.
Yeah.
But he's never wavered. He's never, to me, wavered. I don't know if in his quietest moments himself, if he's said, what the hell am I doing this for? But to me, they've always been staunch and they've always gone, we've got to make this work. It's great for the city. It's great for the country. And I think when we have people like Sarpreet and Libby coming through, I mean, I've sat with the owners and you know, Henry's take, one of our owners, one of the more passionate ones, just turned to me and said, well, this is why we do it.
Yeah.
And he gets that. I tell you, this year's was very hard for all of us standing in that lounge watching that game. And Henry was there and he's going, what do we do? How do we do this? Got to fix it. Let's change that and all that sort of stuff. And then in one of these games, he did turn to me and said, actually, that's why we do it.
Yeah.
It was one of the games, Sarpreet and Libby.
And that's the point that we've kind of had over the last few weeks when we've talked about the season as a whole, is that so much went wrong, but there was at least a shining light of the academy system starting to work. And because the club hasn't got everything wrong this season. You said earlier that you have got some things wrong, and there were some big decisions that were potentially not the right decisions.
But
everything was wrong this season.
No. And we made the big decisions. It was almost like high risk, high return. We made the big decisions. We thought, right, we really want to – no one goes into these things going, let's stuff it up this year. It's going to be fantastic.
Yes.
We made the big decisions because we really wanted to push it on and go, look, we think this is going to be the best thing for the club. And it didn't come off for whatever reason, despite all – you know, doing all the research and talking to people and all that sort of thing. But the, you're absolutely right. The academy has. We knew going into the academy when we started it, when you know, Asia Pacific came up from Christchurch, that it was going to take 5 years. And all the research we talked to, and everyone we talked to, because we talked to clubs in the Hong Kong Sevens, I talked to some of the Premier League clubs, and they said, yeah, academies are great. It takes you 5 years before you start getting kids coming through. I'm saying, geez, 5 years. Can we wait 5 years for that to thing pay off?
That was 5 years ago now, though.
That was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
APFA came out 5 years ago. And you just, you know, it started, a few kids coming through, but now with Taproot and Libby, and there's more kids in there now. I mean, we're really thrilled. And that, but that's been really hard work. And part of the thing that drives, and Rob reflected a little bit on it in his talk with Piney, was that we've had to fight for that to get teams in the Premiership and get teams in this, that, and the other thing. And FFA to allow us to have players going between all these teams. It's not. It's been hard. It's been really, really hard. And we're still disadvantaged. We still can't play Champions League. Yeah. Only club in the world that can't play Champions League.
Yeah.
We get. We can't play finals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not that we're set up. It's not why we set up the academy.
Finals in the New Zealand League.
New Zealand League.
Yeah.
And even in the Australian League, if we make the finals, we still can't play Asian Champions League.
Totally, yeah, yeah.
And we don't get any prize money from Team Wellington, let's say, going to the Club World Cup.
Yeah.
If Team Wellington wins the money, we don't get any of that.
It goes to all the clubs.
It goes to all the clubs, so it's divided nine ways, not two.
So that's what you're talking
about. That's part of our criteria for entry.
That's what you're talking about when, I think in Rob's statement and on the interview, and you've said earlier that you don't get much support from New Zealand football.
Mm.
It's financial contributions that every other club get is the point. Is that what Rob's trying to say there?
Yeah, I mean, part of it is you know, allowing the structures for us. I mean, we would still change things now if we could.
Yeah.
But financially, it's the burden's all on us. And I think, it's, to be honest with you, I actually think it's going to get worse. So it's tough. It's tough. You know, we're doing the under 20s has now been run by us essentially out of the Premiership. That academy has hundreds of thousands of dollars a year to run that.
Totally.
And it's very hard to raise commercial funds to cover that thing. So
there's no glamour in the New Zealand League or the under 20s.
No, it's not really. I mean, the emergence of players like Libby and Saprit is starting to shine a light on it. So some people are going, actually, that's not, we might have a little look at that.
Yeah.
So we can help out. We want to help. We want to be part of that. But it's not $500,000 to run it.
Mm. Yeah. So looking at the season as a whole, we've talked about what's good, what the success was. What would you say that the biggest failing this season was for the club?
I don't think we got the head coach right.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty obvious.
Yeah. Well, he left.
Yeah, exactly.
And
that just had a flow-on effect to everything else?
Yeah. One of the criteria that we it was really, very important to us when we went into the head coach recruitment was somebody who was going to punch above their weight. So someone who could take a club who didn't have the biggest budget in the world, a little like a Leicester. How could you be a Leicester in the A-League? So not have the biggest budget, not have oodles of cash around, but still fairly solid. I mean, we're right in the middle in terms of spend in our players. But how can we punch above our weight to ensure that we'd make sure we'd be the top six, but ideally top four? And you know, we went through a lot of discussions with Dario. How are you going to do it? How do you set it up? How do you do it? And you know, he ticked a lot of boxes in that regard. But for whatever reason, the cultural divide was much larger than we thought it was going to be. I mean, foreign coaches have succeeded in the A-League. I think Marco Kurtz is doing a fine job at Adelaide, as an example. And there are other coaches have done it as well. Less so recently, to be fair, but let's just say they have done a job.
Yeah.
But it was just that step too far.
So in the search for a new coach right now, you've learned from all these things, and that's I think you're on record saying that you're looking to someone with A-League experience.
Yeah, that we certainly are going to value that criteria highly.
Yeah.
So we have a fairly rigorous spreadsheet of attributes and a weighted criteria that we do on things like knowledge of A-League, coaching credentials, win ratios, culture, man management, all that sort of stuff. And it has a weighted average, and we've bumped up the weighting on two things, A-League knowledge or Australian New Zealand player knowledge and knowledge of A-League and its idiosyncrasies. Because the other major one, of course, is the travel that the Wellington that we have to do.
Yeah, totally.
Which, you know, over the years, I think we've come to realise it's more and more of an impact than we originally thought. You know, we have, and Ernie was very, very big on this. He used to talk about it all the time, how he thought it was a massive hindrance to Wellington because every game, away game, is international travel.
Yeah.
Now, Perth is as well, but the fact that you have to do customs every time.
Yeah, it's another hour on each
end,
right?
That's right. And even the when we had the breaking for windows is fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Oh, it's a massive step forward.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is still going to be that players flying back from those windows are still going to be coming off a plane.
Yeah.
8-hour, 10-hour 12-hour flight.
Which is a problem for Europe. Europe doesn't have that problem where it's a 12-hour flight anywhere.
That's right. Yeah. So, and we'll always play overseas. Yeah. We're never going to have games in New Zealand.
Yeah.
So while it's great that at least we're not losing players in the window, we're still going to lose maybe 5, 6, 7 players, and they're going to come back and go, well, we've been on a plate for 10 hours and how we manage that. But that's, I mean, we're not, it's just part of our life.
Yeah.
We can't change it. So now we're going to go, as we talk to these, you know, candidates, how do you do that? So what's your plan for that?
I don't expect you to tell us who the next coach is going to be tonight, but where are you at?
I do. Come on. Spill the beans.
Cam, settle down. But where are you at in that process? I think you've kind of set a vague timeline of relatively soon on it.
Look, it's still, we're still talking to people.
Yeah.
And it's still, there are, you know, good candidates. We haven't made up our mind, to be fair. I don't think it's months, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But it's probably, you know, next 2 weeks, something like that. We're relatively relaxed. We obviously put out the statement last night that Mikey's has moved on.
Yes.
There are a couple of players who we have been talking to leading up to this time of the year about their future. And also with these prospective head coaches, we've been raising these names as well. And the feedback's been almost identical across all of them as to how we stace all these players into our, going forward within the club.
So that allows you as a club to make some decisions without having a person in the seat?
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, Mikey's been a fantastic servant for the club. You know, he's been great on and off the field. That's really important for us. And he's gone off into the next stage of his career, and we're actually we're totally okay with that.
Any other players on the way out?
Might be. Again, so I can't, you know.
I know.
I can't talk about it because it's not my decision. It's not my right to.
I'm being mean by asking. Any other questions around the table? We'll open it up to the floor. Or you're just pointing me back to the pre-prepared sheet that you made me earlier.
I don't remember what's on the sheet.
All right, okay, I'll jump in.
If you don't want to hear your own voice, you can just pass it to Dave and let Dave say one of them.
Yeah, sure. Ask the bottom one, Dave. Ask the one right at the bottom.
Oh no, I'll leave that for Cam. I'll ask one. So I think there's been some feedback that communication around the Auckland games wasn't that great. That's obviously an area that I think you'd accept could have been better. What are you looking at doing for next season and season beyond around, I guess, explaining better what's going on there and giving more warning?
Yeah, I'm happy to put my hand up and say we didn't do that well. It was, you know, I know we keep talking about it, but financially yeah, I get stretched and there's a lot of, and I'm not, you know, I don't want to make excuses for all this sort of stuff, but the reality is that it comes back to the owners. They're chucking money, you know, hand over fist at this thing. And I go into these board meetings, I feel so guilty because we need more money to pay for players, we need more money to pay staff. And so any time that we can sort of cut that loss a little bit, if I have to take a beating for it, I'll take a beating for it, because these guys are putting in way more than I will ever put into this club. And Auckland games allow us to do that. Now, we didn't want to necessarily take the second game away. We were hoping that it was going to be, we're going to be top four, we're going to have 10,000 people at the games, and no problems at all. As the season wore on, we went, this is not looking good.
It became very clear that wasn't going to happen.
It became very clear pretty early on. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we made the decision, and again, it's like it helped close the gap. It's still a gap. It's still a significant gap, but it helped a little bit. This year, you know, we've been talking about it and we want to have a plan and we want to lock in the games. And, you know, how many, we haven't decided on how many games will be outside Wellington, but it won't be four like we've had to do in some years.
Yep.
There are some restrictions on Westpac Stadium this year again. There is basically almost the all of Feb is out.
All right.
So we're going to have to do something there.
Hut wreck.
Well,
hut wreck.
Yeah. To be honest, we'd love to.
Yeah.
We'd love to do Hut Rick again.
Could you please tie that light down a bit better?
Yeah.
It was swung over me a couple of times and it was not fun.
Well, can you tie it down a little worse? Yeah. Just in case it does swing over him again, that'd be good.
That's why Hut Rick is hard, right? Is that you have to build a stadium because it doesn't exist.
Exactly. Now, you know, I raised it with our friends at Hut and there was definitely some interest there, but the reality is the costs are exorbitant for all of us. Now, in time, if they do some investment into Hut Rec, so you're not having to bring in lights, which is, you know, the scaffolding alone is $200,000to bring in scaffolding for three sides. Now, it's not prohibitive, but if you've got to add that in and then you've got to bring in $100,000 for lights and then you've got to bring in $50,000 for this, and so, you know, it adds up pretty quickly. But we would love to. I mean, if I could do it tomorrow and – you know, the Hut were really, really good to work with, but I just don't think we'd be able to do it for next year. We tried, we looked at it, but I just don't think it's going to be possible. And Hutt have said, look, they'd like to do it again, but it might mean some investment, hard investment into Hutt Rec with lights. So not just us, but they can have concerts there. Because the whole idea was that they build these temporary stadiums and it's there for 3 weeks. So we have two games there and then they have concerts or...
Stuff in between. So you're going to look at Auckland and somewhere else next year or just Auckland?
My preference is just Auckland.
Yeah.
And we'll see how we go.
Just QBE Stadium?
QBE or Mount Smart. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you guys have given us feedback on both QBE and Mount Smart. Yeah. Neither of them are ideal. I know we'd love to go to Eden Park, but $50,000 to open the doors. Yeah. I don't know how the Blues do it.
They probably don't.
Poor buggers. So, I mean, we would... if
they have bigger problems.
I know. It's amazing. Bigger problems than us. It's incredible. I think Andrew Gordy was having crack at the other day as well.
Was he?
Oh, yeah.
So was Devlin as well.
Yeah, they're lining up.
We don't listen to Devlin. On anything.
Devlin's right.
Sorry, Domi. I'm going to stop you there.
Wait. No. Domi has to say, and he's following the company line, it's fine.
Okay.
It's fine.
Yeah.
We're not saying we should be immune to criticism. That's as well.
No.
We get that. I mean, you know, with the season that we've had and the wins that we've had and the negativity around the license, which is easy to have a little crack at, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to take criticism. It would be ridiculous if you thought we're not. What we don't like is the fact that it really makes me angry. And to be honest, a little bit sad is when New Zealand media are picking up the Australian line and running with it. Because I can see why the Australians want to run with the Phoenix Out stuff. But when you get New Zealand media doing as well and not checking stuff, I go, wow, this is really disappointing. And sometimes when they write it and then they slip opinion on it and go, well, that's okay because I put an opinion on it without checking facts, I go, that makes me cry. It really does.
But at the same time, there are media organisations here that do a lot more for football in general, including the Phoenix, than others.
Oh, yeah.
And potentially it might be that not just you, but everyone's seeing a negative article, but actually there is an article there. And for every negative article, there's four match reports that didn't exist elsewhere.
Yep.
And it's them finding the balance between that. And I agree with you, running with a story that's been perpetuated by Fairfax Australia, and so stuff runs it here without any checking, is frustrating, because then people here point to it. And Joe Bloggs down the street sees me in a yellow fever shirt and says, oh, what's happening with the Phoenix? And that's the hard part, is that that's what people hear.
And people are time poor, so they'll often read a headline and that's what it.
Yeah.
And that's a clickbait. Great headline. Click it through. First paragraph. Wow, that's what it is. Phoenix has been sold. Switch off, gone.
Mm.
And, you know, the days of, you know, investigative journalism where there was people used to write things in, you know, in depth is... It's pretty hard to do that these days. We get that.
Okay, serious question. Think back to the hug you gave Greeny after he won that game and stopped the spoon, because you may need to.
Yeah.
So what's the current issue that you want to address most for next season? That's why they left it to me to ask.
Yeah. I think we have to get the best coach that we can get. That's where it's all. We get that. We know that's where it begins and where it ends, is you have to get results on the pitch. And Rob talked about that. I mean, ultimately, if we want this thing to work, we've got to start winning games and being in the final series. And we have to get that right. We're the best possible person we can. We're not going to get Pep Guardiola. Let's be realistic. I mean, they have pockets that are endlessly deep. And even some of the salaries that pay in the A-League for coaches is quite high for some of these guys. But there are good coaches. There are good coaches out there, and we're talking to them.
I guess talking about the coach, so you identified that obviously the process didn't go right last time. You know, that was a key failing of last season, that you didn't appoint the right person. What are you changing this time around to try and fix whatever went wrong last time?
We did a lot of background checks. This time we're doing more background checks within the Australian New Zealand community, which is obviously because that's the direction we're going in anyway. But we are... There are both actively and people are proactively coming to us with a whole lot of, we think this and we know this guy and we know this what's like, we know what that person's like. So we're taking that all on board.
Is there a column on your spreadsheet that says unlikely to slap a player?
There is a column which is similar to that, yes.
Good. Risk factor.
Has someone's number in that column changed recently? No, don't answer that.
Actually, Ferry had form in that area, so
he did,
I think the number probably stayed the same.
He hadn't slapped David Carney yet, so...
was that a plus factor?
The thing is that, like, it's both. Like, for me, I'm like, I would love a coach here that would go out and slap David Carney. But also slapping David Carney, so, like, you're going to get a four-game ban. Is there a way to do it without getting banned? That's probably the thing. If he snaps you first,
do it on the street.
On the street,
you get a fine.
He's got a prison.
No, you won't. Yeah. You'll get a fine if it's your first off. It's fine.
It's not this guy's.
Maybe if you kiss him first and then slap him.
Yeah, we'd need to probably change topics.
this is going off the rockers. Yeah. You got a question, Cam?
Yeah, okay. So, obviously, Domi, a lot of fans have been turned off this season due to performances, poor results, and the perceived lack of engagement. So, what kind of strategies are you going to use to win them back, and what kind of things are you looking to implement to improve that fan engagement?
The world's moved where fan engagement has become so important, and we get that, and it is time consuming, and it takes a lot of resource, and we have invested into that area, and we will continue to invest into that area, in some ways, you know, the old marketing days, we used to pick up posters and do radio ads and news, but it's all gone. And now it's all online, which is much more, to be honest, much more user-friendly, and that does enable you to get to the heart of where your fans are.
But also much harder to convert that into a ticket sale.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so you can get a like, you can get a retweet, you can get whatever. It doesn't necessarily mean you're going to turn up to a game.
Yeah.
And the difference between that is you've got to do that, and you have to win games, and you have to do all your community programs. So we've beefed up our community program this year, and we'll be doing that again next year. So we'll do even more. We had our football diversity and inclusion program this year, which was, you know, I think we did maybe 20 or 30 buses to games.
Yep.
We had at a Porirua, and Mike Tana, the mayor of Porirua, was on these buses coming to games, and we'll do more of that, and we'll expand it into upper huts. This is low decile schools. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't think we do a great job of telling these stories, you know, that we have 40 kids in Porirua coming to games who've never even been to Westpac Stadium before in their life. And that's, you know, we didn't really realise that until we found that out, that these kids were so genuinely appreciative of us picking them up from Porirua, coming into town, giving them experience of the game, put them on the bus and taking them home again.
There's a lot of kids that live in those areas who the idea of even getting money for a train ticket into town is just not possible.
Yeah.
So this kind of is a kind of a life-changing experience for them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, you've been there taking photos of them. I mean, it's hard for us, you know, to appreciate it, but when you see their faces, you know, well, this is actually pretty impressive. Yeah. And to be fair, the owners are driving that. I mean, that is funded by the owners directly. So outside Phoenix budget as such, that was funded by a couple of the owners who just really wanted to do it. And we found that a bus out of Porirua was 100% full, and a bus out of Karori was 50% full. So we're going, all right, we'll do Porirua, we'll do more Upper Hutt, we'll do more Nainai, we'll do more, you know, Stokes Valley.
And so that's how you engage with the communities of those areas.
Of those areas, that's right. But we've got the football inclusion program as well, diversity and inclusion program, which will expand again. But, you know, coming back to the mainstream, it is – it's going to be a lot more work in on the online stuff, and telling those stories.
Yeah,
we haven't worked out what our marketing angle is going to be. In fact, we're just looking to set up a session in the next couple of weeks where we want to get some fan involvement in that, to get their feedback on how do we get 10,000 people to a game.
Yeah,
every game, how do we get 10,000 people, regardless of the price of hot dogs and regardless of how, you know, the results from the team,
the weather,
regardless of the weather, how do we get 10,000 people? Because that's going to be close to being what our metric is. And we keep banging on about the metric. So we'll have a discussion in that session is what that looks like and how we talk about that, what's the story around that. But that's going to be key.
Comes down to club identity as well, I think.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah.
And one of the things that this international window thing does is that we can actually sign more New Zealanders.
Kiwis,
for the first, like, there has been active you're trying to do the opposite, and it hasn't worked because you would lose, when we had eight all whites, you'd lose the eight all whites and have half a team. And we've seen over the last few years, well, we're down to two all whites at the club and one of them's Dura.
Yeah.
And maybe the other one's going. And so, I'm sorry, Mikey's already going. So we see that's a problem. Is that something that can now potentially change, and you can try and engage the New Zealand football community with more people like Sapri and Libby?
Well, and that's exactly right. And you mentioned it before, is that that's actually the bright spark in the whole season.
Mm.
And we can use those cases like Libby and Sapri to build, you know, some avidity around the club because we have young Kiwis coming through. And as we've gone through the head coach process, that's been very clear, and we've said, okay, look, this is what we want to do. Now that we are breaking for windows, notwithstanding we've still got the travel coming back, but let's just say now we're breaking windows, we can have more New Zealanders. And all the coaches said that should be your number one strategy, is to sign more New Zealanders into your team to build your club culture and your identity. Make Westpac Stadium a fortress again, have a whole lot of New Zealanders coming through, make yourself very, very difficult to beat at home, and then win some games on the road, and you're in the finals.
In terms of
like the rookie days.
The rookie days.
The thing is, with the rookie days, you do win at home, you don't lose at home. If you don't lose, you get 7,000 to 8,000. If you win a consistent number of games, you get tens. It is that simple.
Yeah. Didn't you get all that stuff with Dot Love Data where the stats were quite clear that when you won a game, more people in the next game?
Yeah, and it was – and finally, that's right. You're 50% more likely. If you go to a Phoenix game and we won, you're 50% more likely to come back to the next game. And not only that, we also did – Wellesley and his team did a regression analysis, which was the more people that were at the game, the more chances we were going to score goals.
Yeah.
And it was something like for each 1,000 people, we were more likely to score half a goal or something like that.
I guess you get into a correlation causation problem there, in that if we're a good team, we score more goals, therefore more people are there anyway. So
it's just the data, Patrick.
I know. But it's fascinating. I love this.
Yeah.
I love this part. We could talk about this for a whole podcast.
But yeah, that's right.
We're not going to.
Maybe next week.
if Domi comes back for another week. The back office, you've lost losing some key staff recently. Johnny Schmidt being one of them.
Johnny.
Who's done a hell of a lot for the club.
Yes.
Over the time he's been there. What's the kind of plan to help transition that? Is there going to be different structures in place at the club, or are you going to recruit similar people to come in?
I think you're always going to need an event manager.
Yeah.
Like I say, Johnny's done a great job. He's been there almost given that he started when he was at school as a volunteer and came through the ranks and was there for 10 years.
You need to start paying him because he was around too much.
We actually did, yeah. We actually said, well, he's been long enough. You stick around long enough, you get a job. There's a lesson. We're definitely going to, and we will spend more on the back office this year than we did last year, because, like we talked about before, to do the fan engagement job, you have to spend a lot more time because it's very resource hungry. You know, when you talk about all social media and doing and creating content for your channels, that's very, very hard.
Yeah,
not hard, but it's very, very time consuming, both in terms of hours and in terms of dollars. So we'll invest more into the back office staff. Slight tweak in some of the roles, but there is still, we have to have a heavy emphasis on the commercial side. So we've got a good person now in the commercial area, and we're going to recruit another one.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll look to, like I say, probably one more role still left to go in the other side of it as well, in the back office. And Johnny, we have to have an event manager, so.
Yeah.
Definitely.
You miss Johnny, though?
Yeah, I mean, Johnny's been fantastic. And the thing about Johnny is not only has he learned the event stuff very well, but he's actually really good. He just knows football.
Yeah.
He knew the scene. He's been around for ages. And he's just like, Johnny, who did this? And even because he's not quite as good as Piney, but he remembered stuff from years ago.
Yeah.
And games and all that.
So ability-wise, he's well ahead of Piney.
Yeah.
One thing I'll say about Johnny is the first time I saw him after I heard that he was leaving was I congratulated him on all the good work he'd done, but he said, can't wait to see you guys in the Fever Zone next season. So he's already excited to keep coming back to games, but just be on the other side of the fence. So that's cool.
To be honest, I mean, he's going across to rugby, which is great. Yeah. I mean, he'll pick up a different set of skills there, different organisation. But, we've started talking. I mean, Matt Evans is coming into Wellington Rugby, and we've already started talking about how can we share some roles and all that sort of stuff. So I said to Johnny the other day, Johnny, you might be going down the road, but it might be 50-50 in a couple of months.
You're just trying to get Johnny back. Yeah. I think Johnny even kitted up for the Wenix at one point, I think, in Fiji,
because there wasn't enough players.
There wasn't enough players. Johnny put his boots on and sat on the bench.
Yeah. It didn't get any minutes though.
I'm not surprised that Greeny.
Really disappointing.
I don't think he would have let the side down there.
No, I think it would have been solid.
I don't think anyone would have passed him the ball, but
he would have bodied someone.
He'd run a lot, and he'd have gone up front where he couldn't have done too much.
He would have been the wrong age to play for the team, but he would have looked fine. He would have fit right in. So, should we move on from that now?
That's harsh, mate. That is hard. Fair, but it's really harsh.
I've said a good thing about Johnny already. Should we move on to Team Wellington now, shall we?
Yeah, go on.
Were you there on the weekend? Oh, no, the week before, get the Auckland game?
No, I wasn't, but I was watching it on TV.
Yep.
And I was texting Chodies after the game, saying, oh, I just absolutely thrilled.
Yeah.
Absolutely thrilled for them. I mean, Jose's a very good coach, terrific guy, great to work with. We obviously have, a bit of relationship with Team Wellington now, we're passing them the players who have quite fit into our system anymore, but we want to keep them close.
Liam and Jack.
Justin Gully,
you're right.
Your mate Watson.
Hamish Watson.
Even Scotty Basale has been with us in the past. And Liam. I mean, these are all good players. And to be, one of the strategies is, well, in the future, if we have an injury problem, at least they're in Wellington, not too far away. I think it's absolutely fantastic. I mean, it's great now. There's been a bit of a shift in the power base. I think Auckland City have done a fantastic job over the years.
But it's hard to keep it up. for so long.
Yeah.
And
you know, it's like I couldn't be even more thrilled for the Chodies, you know, Peter Chart. I mean, that's hard work in doing the premiership.
Yeah.
You know,
so much less sponsorship dollar in that.
So much less sponsorship. And still the expectation is still very, very high.
Yeah.
You know, because we have our under 20 side in that competition, we go to the quarterly meetings that they have, and the poor premiership guys trying to scrape together a living. I'm like, you know, I mean, it's tough for us.
Yeah.
I really don't know how to do it sometimes.
It makes it even more impressive that even with Auckland's big setup and everything, that Team Wellington were able to do it. Obviously, 2-2 result on the day, which meant that on away goals, 2-2 on aggregate, that Team Wellington go through. They did it the hard way at the end, though.
That was a brutal last 5 minutes, man, honestly.
It was the last 17 minutes.
Yeah, well, especially when after they scored their second goal, my stream kept dropping out.
It
died at 98 minutes. So I missed the last couple of minutes.
So we went up 2-0 in the first half. Two goals to Angus Kakoli. One of them a header across the goal, and then a penalty that I think Roy Kiara had won. And it was looking great until I think Auckland got their first goal back in the 70th minute. And
the yips.
They got a little bit of the yips. Auckland conceded in the 90s. Auckland scored in the 97th, and then couldn't quite find another goal.
Eric got the first.
Yeah. My mistake. Thank you for correcting me, Cam.
You are welcome. I will take that credit.
It definitely wasn't the other person in the room feeding you information in your ear.
The bouncer did not have a word to me at all.
But it was bloody nervy at the end. Once it was 2-2 and once one goal could change it. The first two goals going in, you knew it didn't actually change things, so it wasn't really a big problem. But
was it earlier that scored the own goal?
Yeah, it was.
Did you see what he did? Like, as soon as it came off his foot, he just pulled his jersey over his head and just wished for death.
He knew.
Poor bastard.
Because that was the equaliser, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Over the course of the two legs, we were the better side. I think we were better than away goals win shows.
Yeah.
Especially in the first half of that second leg.
Yeah.
I think we absolutely dominated
Auckland
them and deserved that 2-0.
Auckland City had nothing.
Said that.
No.
Yeah. In the post-match interview, he said that they bossed us.
Yeah, it reminded me more of the first game of the season where we beat them 3-1 down here, where we were again totally dominant and deserved to win by more than we actually did. And yeah, that first half performance was probably the best I'd seen T-Dubs play this season.
It was a complete clash of styles that suited Team Wellington. And it's not often that the team wanting to play attacking football and scoring goals gets rewarded for it versus the defensive team was happy to put 10 players behind the ball. But what it meant was that Auckland had absolutely nothing in that first half of this game. Is that it was? I'd love to see what the position stats, because to me it felt like it would be 70-30, where Team Wellington constantly had the ball, working it forward, couldn't find a way in and brought it back. And that's the best football I've ever seen from Team Wellington. Obviously, it fell apart a little bit later on because this team is not used to being in this position.
Yeah. And Auckland is a classy side, and it showed.
Yeah.
They didn't give up. They played the full 101 minutes that the referee decided was required.
We'll talk about that later. But I think across the whole two legs, Auckland were definitely in it the whole time, but Team Wellington were just that little bit more in it. I think a 2-2 aggregate actually reflects that quite well. But yeah, there was not 8 minutes of additional time in that half.
Like, there was one serious injury in the second half, which would have accounted for a large chunk of the 8 minutes, plus the sub. So I could understand 8 minutes because I reckoned about 5 to 6 of it was that one
injury.
Let's
give 8 minutes. But then he found the referee, Nick Waldron, found 3 more minutes from those 8 where the ball was in play the whole time. Yes, there was a goal in there, but he found 3 more minutes.
I'd give him a minute. I would give him a minute for the goal being scored and getting it back to halfway. Okay, a minute. No worries.
Like in a normal game of football, you play 45 minutes and then you add the 3 on at the end. That's the default.
Completely just hometown.
Yeah.
Kind of advantage there because they were winning corners and you know it was good chances and you don't want to be the ref who blows it on an attacking corner for the home side. That was what caught him there was 2 minutes of that was home corners and he's got the crowd baying for him to keep playing. And,
it would have been
if that had been in Wellington, he blows it long before
then. It would have been an absolute robbery if Auckland had scored and they came bloody close to doing so.
Bessalay batted one out at one stage, didn't
it? Yeah, and did they hit the post or something very late? I can't quite remember. It's all turning into a blur for me. I was actually at a rehearsal in the last 10 minutes of the game because I went on so long. I was sitting at a piano turning the page for the pianist, and so I was having to follow where we were in the music as well as having my phone open watching the last few minutes of this game. And if I missed a page turn, the whole thing just falls apart and the rehearsal we just start again. So it was very nervy for me. But hey, we did it.
Brilliant.
We beat Auckland City in the Champions League.
Now we got Lautoka.
Yeah, Lautoga, who got up on a 1-0
away goal.
Well, they won 1-0 on the... Oh, was it 1-1, was it? Or something?
First leg was 1-1, and second leg, I think, was 1-0.
Oh, yeah, so the away leg of the way goal didn't mean anything. But, yeah, they won 2-1 over Marist, which means that, yeah, it's a Team Wellington versus Lautoga final.
Benji Tatori coming back to Wellington. Yeah.
Benji Tatori, Corey Chitterborough, Brian Keltek is there, I think.
Is he? Yeah.
Yeah,
I was actually a bit disappointed because Henry Fa'arodo is obviously plays for Marist. And I'd love to have seen him back on David Farrington just for one last time. Yeah. And I messaged him on Facebook and said exactly that. And he said he was a bit gutted too. So hopefully he carries on next year.
He had a really good game as well. It's just,
he's a great player.
They have quite an old midfield. I mean, H is getting on a bit. Yeah. And yeah, they tied towards the end there, which...
H is quality. He's always been quality. And yeah, I'd love to have seen him go out in the final.
Absolutely.
A loss, obviously. But still.
So the first leg of the finals being hosted in Wellington on the 12th or the 13th of May. So a week and a bit away. That's either Saturday or Sunday. Hopefully the Sunday, because then we don't have local football as a problem. And then the away leg the week after over in Fiji, which will be very exciting. And the best chance Team Wellington's ever going to have to qualify for the Club World Cup, which will make a huge difference to this organisation.
Considering they played them in the warm-ups. Oh, they played
two games in January.
Killed them, was it 3-0 and 5-0?
Yeah, this is a very different.
9-0 over two legs.
Very different kettle of beasts.
But still, in Fiji.
Oh, that's not
well
the expression.
Done.
Kettle of fish.
That's a nice metaphor you've got there, actually, Patrick.
What's the beast one? Different ways it's going to beast? I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing.
Skin of beast.
He's done a very good metaphor. It's very well done.
Okay. Very exciting for Team Wellington. And it's kind of, sorry, Damien, but it's kind of nice having a winning football team in the city, isn't it?
100% agree. I totally agree.
Yeah.
I totally agree. And
you just want
more
it to be yours?
Yeah.
I suppose it was both of them.
I'd love both of them to be to be top of their league and fighting it out.
Well, you'd be there with the 50-50 shirt on.
Personal opinion, there's probably about four guys in that Team Wellington team that I think the Knicks should be having a serious look at for next season. I think that could actually step up to that level. So possibly more, but I personally think four.
Immediately leaps off the page, right? Gully looks fantastic.
Yeah, Gully's been the standout in the league. Yeah. And
you said you were going to do that.
No, I'm going
to
do it.
Domi doesn't have to say anything at all, but Gully, I'd look at Hillier. Jack Henry St. Clair would be another one I'd be looking at as well.
Like I said, that was always part of the idea was to keep him near, that we could keep an eye on them.
Yeah.
The positive thing is actually there are a few kids now that are actually proper, because it used to be in the old days that they didn't used to play kids in the premiership.
Yeah,
but Auckland City have started doing it now. Mm. Those are good kids that they got playing.
Yeah,
I know they're from Wellington. That's another story.
McCowan and Owen Parker Price. We've talked about them on here before. They are excellent young footballers,
and will do a job at A League level in 3-4 years' time.
And they could do a job at a high level possibly as well. Yeah, just and really those kind of players.
Let's just go with A League for now.
Let's face it, OPP. Yeah, it's easy to chant going for that.
Nah,
Patrick, yeah, you know me.
Naughty by nature? No.
No.
Oh my God.
Fuck's sake, Patrick.
It's another Maldini.
Are you on this, Dave? Are you in on this? Okay, great. I have to Google this later on.
You seem to think I'm very close to your age, but there's still quite a gap there, Pat. Closer.
Shall we talk about Paul Gascoigne again, seeing as we've got guests?
That's Gascoigne.
You've been Googling it, have you?
Did someone actually tell you?
Google Translate to say it.
I watched highlights of him. It's very hard to pick it out when they're just yelling it, but I've got it. So.
At any point did it sound like Gascoigne?
So to be honest, I was basing my Gascoigne off playing
Tony Cascarino
Road to the World Cup 98, and I'm pretty sure, I haven't been able to find footage of it to show you, but I'm pretty sure in there they butcher his name, and I just learned that as a child playing Road to the World Cup 98 on PS1.
He wasn't selected for that World Cup, actually.
No, but he was in the game. He was in the game because he was in the game. Anyway, this is Shit Chat, so we might wrap up there. Thank you very much for joining us tonight, Domi.
My pleasure, Patrick.
It's been excellent. Always good having you on, even when it's not so fun. And there's relatively harder questions.
I think we said before we started this, I'd rather talk to you guys direct.
Yeah.
And then we go straight to the guys that... the thousands and thousands of people that download this thing rather than try and go through. Sometimes it's better to go direct and go through the media and have the message misconstrued. Yeah, there are good media guys out there. There's good journos out there. But sometimes it's good going straight to you guys.
We definitely appreciate it. Obviously, it's great to have you in at the start of the season and the end of the season. Bookings us nicely.
Bookings.
All right, that'll do for this week. Thank you, everybody for listening. From four of us and Domi as well, have a very good evening if that's when you're listening. I've butchered this again.
You have. You still haven't done Kiwis Overseas.
20 weeks in a row that have been really good.
I know. Anyway, it's done. Thank you for listening. Bye.
Very Hard No brings you.
Tony Cascarino brings you. More Trophies Than the Knicks brings you.
Oh, the podcast.
Yeah, podcast does.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
Upcoming Phoenix City branded merchandise brings you. Nine Sets of Supporters versus Victory brings you.